Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Wraith Squadron, Book 5 of the X-Wing series by Aaron Alston. Twelve X-Wing snub fighters roared down into the atmosphere. The world below, Coruscant, former throne world of the Empire, was an unbroken landscape of urban construction, a vast city blanketed by gray clouds shot through with white and yellow flashes of lightning. Wedge Antilles, the squadron commander, shook his head. Even after the crucial role he'd played conquering this world for the New Republic, he could not get over the grim vista. Within moments, their destination was clear, Imperial Plaza. The plaza was packed with spectators. Even at this altitude, Wedge could see banners and fluttering confetti. As they descended, Wedge flipped his comm system to the squadron channel.
They're here for a show, Rogues. Let's give them one.
The Rogues split into three flight groups, each one maneuvering into a diamond-shaped formation. One X-Wing forward, one back, the two others side by side in the middle, with Wedge's group forward and the other two side by side and behind, making a triangle of diamonds. The flight groups then crisscrossed above the speakers' platforms as they descended, a dazzling display of precision flying, until a mere 10 meters above the ground, they set down. The pilots climbed down from their cockpits into a whirlwind of celebration. At the front of the speakers' platform stood Princess Leia Organa of Alderaan. She caught Wedge's eye and gave him a smile and a shake of the head, acknowledging their mutual dislike of public spectacles such as this, then turned toward the crowd. Citizens of the New Republic, I present you Rogue Squadron. Before I bring Commander Wedge Antilles up to speak, I think I should put the Rogue Squadron's recent accomplishments in perspective. With their efforts... Wedge tuned her out. This was old news to him. Weeks before, he'd led Rogue Squadron on a mission that the New Republic Military Command could not support. Resigning their commissions, the Rogues had mounted a civilian action against the new government of Typhara, where the majority of Bacta, the miracle medicine, was produced. That government was headed by the Empire's former espionage leader, Isane Isart, and could have become the core of a reunited empire. But now Isane Isart was dead, and Rogue Squadron's resignations had apparently been creatively misfiled, meaning that the New Republic was retroactively making the Typharan mission an officially sanctioned operation. Wedge went to stand beside his friends and fellow pilots Hobby Cliven and Wes Jansen.
"Get me up to date," he said. "Is Gauntlet Squadron active?"
Hobby laughed.
"You're behind the times. Corsair was our first squadron, Gauntlet our second, and our third Talon was just commissioned."
"Who's commanding?"
"Lieutenant Min Dunas. You're a good pilot, smart."
Lieutenant Wes Jansen, still baby-faced despite his years of flying for the Alliance and the New Republic, grinned.
"Smart, egotistical, self-centered. You know, a typical Corellian."
Wedge grinned.
"As a broad-minded officer, I should ignore that, but as a Corellian, I'll manage some sort of revenge."
He turned back to Hobby.
"I have an idea for another new X-Wing unit. Something based on our experiences taking Coruscant and Typhara."
The New Republic guard, his face as emotionless as a ferrocrete bunker, admitted Wedge to the office. Within, the furniture was smooth and rounded with colors of the sea, the air cool but uncomfortably moist. Behind his desk, Admiral Akbar, Commander-in-Chief of the New Republic's military operations, returned Wedge's salute. Like other Mon Calamari, with their outsized heads and rubbery skins, he looked to most people like a bipedal intellectual fish. But Wedge knew him to be far more humane and courageous than many who fought for the New Republic. Akbar gestured toward the visitors' chairs.
Commander Antilles, please sit. Your message hinted at, what was it, recommendations for a new type of unit, particularly well-suited to the search for Warlord Zinj.
That's correct. Warlord Zinj, a one-time Imperial Admiral still in possession of a superstar destroyer, was now the New Republic's most important military objective. His hit-and-run missions against New Republic sites were increasing in bold effectiveness, and there was a danger that he might assume Isane Isart's role as the center of an Imperial resurgence. I'd like to form a new X-Wing group, sir. Admiral Akbar's mouth bent in an approximation of a smile.
Rogue Squadron is no longer good enough for you?
Rogue Squadron will always be good enough for me, sir. But in the last several years, I've bumped repeatedly into a glaring weakness in our military. Wedge leaned back, settling in for a lengthy discussion. I think we need another Commando X-Wing Squadron. One where we choose pilots so as to have a full range of intrusion and subversion skill. Normal pilots follow orders and conform themselves to standard tactics, and should. But a commando unit might develop new tactics, new ways of anticipating assaults and ambushes. Akbar's expression was dubious.
Getting pilots for this squadron would be a considerable expense.
No, sir. I want pilots no one else wants. Washouts, pilots staring court-martials in the face, troublemakers and screw-ups. Akbar stared as if he couldn't believe his tympanic membranes.
In the name of the Force, Commander, why?
Wedge took a deep breath.
Well,
some of them, of course, will be irredeemable. I'll wash them out. Some of them will be good men and women who've screwed up one time too many, who know their careers are dead, but would give anything for one more chance.
What would become of Rogue Squadron?
Akbar asked. Captain Seltiu, my second-in-command on the Typhera mission, is more than qualified to lead. I'd take Lieutenant Wes Jansen as my own second-in-command. Once the new squadron is established, I'd hope to return to direct command of Rogue Squadron.
I understand.
Akbar nodded agreeably.
Request refused.
Wedge couldn't speak. He thought he had convinced the Admiral.
Unless...
Wedge found his voice again.
Unless... I'll make a bet with you, Commander. You get your chance at forming this squadron. If 3 months after it goes operational it has proven its worth, you can do as you please.
And if I lose?
You accept promotion to the rank of general and join my advisory staff.
Wedge kept his dismay from his face.
I would seem to win either way, sir. Stop it, you're not fooling anyone. If you had your way, you'd continue flying snub fighters and commanding fighter squadrons until you're a century old. How many promotions have you turned down? Two? Three?
Two.
In a sense, you've already lost, Commander Antilles. You're wagering your career for the good of the New Republic. You're creating new tactics, new weapons, for the New Republic, not just for your squadron. You're already a general. You just don't know it yet.
I guess I'll accept that remark in the spirit in which it was intended, sir.
I have another remark for you, Wedge. News. Bad news. Talon's squad is gone. They were ambushed at Gravin 7. Everyone is dead except for Lieutenant Doros. They were pursuing an anomaly, a standard TIE interceptor far from any hyperspace-capable ship, into an uninhabited system logged as recently secured by New Republic intelligence. That designation turned out to have been false, somehow sliced into our system. The interceptor led them into a shooting gallery, and 11 members of the squadron died.
In a makeshift office on the moon Folor, Wedge sat back in his chair, a recycled ejection seat mounted on a heavy brace, and looked over the list of applicants he and his second-in-command, Wes Jansen, had processed so far. A Tatooine woman with excellent flying marks, already an ace, but a career in the incinerator because of what was listed as chronic insolence. Asked about Luke Skywalker, Phelan Sandskimmer had said,
"Can you imagine being compared to him all your adult life just because you're another pilot from Tatooine? I wish I'd never heard of Luke Skywalker."
Wedge shrugged off her attitude. Her worth was in her performance.
"Next," said Jansen, is Lieutenant Min Donas. A moment later, the commander of the ill-fated Talon squad entered. He was a lean man, just over average height, with a round face and a thick mop of black hair. His face betrayed no emotion. Wedge looked over his records. I understand that command has reviewed the situation on Graven 7 and cleared you for continued fighter duty. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
There was no enthusiasm in the pilot's voice, nor was there a trace of the pain he must have been feeling. West tells me that before joining the Alliance, you belonged to the Corellian Armed Forces, sniper for an elite counterinsurgency unit.
Yes, sir.
Do you think you can train up to your previous standard?
Yes, sir.
Interested in transferring over to a new X-Wing squadron?
Yes, sir.
When Donas had left, Wedge turned to West. Was there enough time on his last mission for him to have been grabbed by the enemy, to have been programmed?
No. It's him, but it's not him.
Well, we'll see how he performs. If he shows the slightest sign of cracking up, I'm going to scrub him.
Hypercom signal detected, Admiral.
Admiral Apwa Trigget looked down from his command chair into the bridge crew pit.
Its origin?
Header code indicates that it's from Zinj at Rancor Base.
I'll take it in my private comm chamber.
Trigget rose, aware that with his graying black hair and beard, his lean form, and the silver and black uniform he'd designed himself, he was an imposing figure. True, he served the warlord Zinj, but his chief officers must understand that he merely hired out his services and those of the implacable, that he was his own master. In the spherical chamber reserved for his private communications, Trigget hit a switch on the main console. Immediately, a three-dimensional image appeared before him. Zinj, twice human-sized, sitting in a black command chair aboard Iron Fist. Trigget turned a knob, and Zinj's image shrank until it was just over human-sized. He kept from his face the sheer delight the action of shrinking Zinj brought him. The warlord, a corpulent man with a florid complexion and drooping mustachios, favored him with a smile. He wore the crisp white uniform of an Imperial Grand Admiral, a rank he had never truly attained. Yet his current power was such that no one could protest this presumption on his part.
I've just read the report from your last transmission. I wanted to congratulate you on the destruction of Talon Squadron.
Trigget gave him a sardonic little bow. Thank you. The code slicer who planted the false information about the security of the Graven system later reported that they have decommissioned Talon Squadron entirely. Zinj smiled.
What if your code slicer is caught and broken?
Impossible. I'm giving her a commission aboard Implacable.
Good. Now, I want to hear early results from the Mort project.
Ah. The first few thousand Mort-class parasite droids have been distributed to keep track of rebel movements. Once we get data from them, we can go looking.
Good. Keep me up to date on all your interesting little operations.
As always, my lord.
After the warlord's image had faded to nothingness, Trigget sighed. Zinj was much easier to deal with than Izane Isart, but Zinj's desire to have his fingers in each new enterprise was extremely tiresome.
Jansen consulted his chrono. Our next candidate is Vort Zabinring, a Gamorrean.
Wedge chuckled. Very funny, Wes. The green-skinned, pig-faced Gamorreans were found among untrained guard and police forces on many worlds. They were technologically primitive, disinterested in any of the advanced sciences required for technological professions. It's impossible to train Gamorrean males to something as complicated as fighter piloting. They have glandular balances that make them extremely violent and impatient. But Jansen spoke into his comlink, and a moment later, a Gamorrean, dressed in the standard New Republic pilot's uniform, walked into the office and saluted. Wedge began, I'm sure you understand that I'm curious how you, overcame Gamorrean biology and learned to fly. When the Gamorrean spoke, his natural voice, grunts and squeals, emerged first. Then, cutting through it, was his other voice,
a mechanical one, emerging from the translator device implanted in his throat.
I did not overcome my biology. These were changes forced upon me by Binring Biomedical Product.
Wedge nodded. They provide food to the Empire's armed forces, nasty green nutrient pastes that take forever to go bad. The Gamorrean nodded.
They also engineer animals to adapt to different planetary environments. They have less wholesome experiments as well. I was one of them. For purposes of espionage, the Emperor wanted Gamorreans with human-like methods of self-control. They made alterations to our biochemistries. My attention span surpasses human norm. My mathematical acumen registers at the genius level. I do not lose control of my anger.
Wedge sat back. How did you come to join the Alliance?
One of my creators arranged for me to escape the Binring compound. Eventually, I reached Obroa Sky.
The library world.
I learned much there and eventually chose to come to the Alliance.
All right, Wedge said. To more immediate concerns, your record states that you're facing a court-martial for striking a superior officer. What do you have to say? The Gamorrean began...
In my experience, a Gamorrean flyer tends to receive an undue amount of abuse from his fellows. Not just pranks, sometimes sabotage, lies. I have struck several fellow pilots in well-moderated challenge matches. I have never had to strike one more than once. You will notice that charges were filed against me within half an hour of the alleged incident. No one I have ever struck has been able to speak coherently within half an hour of my striking him.
Wedge considered. Well, that's about all for now. Candidate training begins tomorrow. He rose and he shook the Gamorrean's hand. By the way, what do you like to be called? Wart?
I am content with Wart, but many others call me Piggy. I am content with it, for I can ignore the derogatory component that goes with it.
Wedge and Jansen exchanged glances. The lieutenant and I once knew a very fine human pilot who went by the name Piggy. There's no derogatory component to it in this squadron. Rather, it's a badge of honor I hope you can live up to. When the Gamorrean was gone, Wedge turned to Wes. Well, who's next? An Ewok? A Womp Rat? A moment later, Flight Officer Tanner entered. Kel Tanner stood nearly 2 meters tall, a human male with a handsome, sculpted face that holo recorders would adore, dark hair framed light blue eyes. Kel snapped to a precision salute. Flight Officer Tanner reporting, sir, and a pleasure to meet you. Likewise. Let me introduce you to my second-in-command, Lieutenant Jansen. Wedge watched as the pilot's salute pose became iron-rigid. Lieutenant Wes Jansen, sir? With a bewildered expression, Jansen said, That's me. Kel turned back to Wedge. Sir, I withdraw my application. Permission to leave? Why? This man killed my father, sir. Jansen, his expression shocked, searched Kel's face. Your name wasn't always Tanner, was it? No, sir. Doran? Yes, sir. Wait in the hall, Wedge said. Wedge turned to his second in command. What's this all about? Jansen seemed to look into his past. Did I ever tell you that my first kill was an Alliance pilot? No. Not something one advertises. Back then, I was a pilot trainee in the Tirfan Yellow Aces. Our mission was an ambush of an Imperial freighter and its TIE fighter escort. As the freighter came in, we saw that the escort was twice as big as advertised, and one of our pilots, Kissick Doran, had a panic attack and took off in his Y-wing. My wingmate and I were sent out to bring him back, or shoot him down. And you did? The words exploded out of Jansen. Which I had to. If he had communicated on any standard frequency, if he had crossed into the base's sensor range, if any of these things happened, we were compromised, and the unit might have been slaughtered. I tried to crowd him down to land, but I couldn't, and I... The words stuck in his throat for a moment. I shot him down.
It sounds as though you did everything you could to keep him alive. Wedge scanned Kell's record. It doesn't say anything here about the Doran family.
They must have changed their family name, falsified records.
Wedge sighed over the datapad. Now, look at this. Taylor was a fighter craft mechanic on Sluis Van. When he came to the Alliance, he trained as a demolitions expert, served with Lieutenant Page's commandos, then demonstrated a native talent for fighting in recreational simulators. Yet in training, one headhunter crashed, one X-Wing set down hard enough that it took a lot of damage. He claimed unresponsive controls both times. Jansen nodded. The two crashes aren't consistent with his skill index. He's brilliant in the simulators. Wedge considered.
Well, I want us to try him out. I just hope the two of you can work together.
Kell strapped himself into his simulator seat and flipped the switches, igniting his X-Wing's ersatz thrust engines. Goal one has all diagnostics in the green. He was still uneasy about working with the man who had murdered his father. But Commander Antilles had persuaded him that with his less than admirable flight record, he would have a hard time getting assigned to any other squadron. His comm system crackled.
Gold 2, I deliver a report, ready to fly.
Kell didn't know who Gold 2 was. The other pilots had been sealed into their simulators by the time Kell had arrived for the mission. Gold 2's voice seemed to be male. Odd pronunciation suggested that Basic was not his native tongue.
Gold 3, everything is nominal, ready to go.
Those were the mechanical tones of Piggy, the Gamorrean.
Gold 4, ready to go.
A female voice. Then Lieutenant Jansen's voice crackled in his ear. Kell stiffened.
We have incoming spacecraft, eyeballs and squints, screening a capital ship. Your job is to keep them off us long enough to launch our transport. You fail, we die. Training protocol 179 is in effect. Control out.
Kell switched the comm over to a direct channel to his wingman. Gold 2, what's training protocol 179?
We don't know, one.
Kell opened his mouth to ask who we was, saw that the chrono was down to 10 seconds, and decided to wait. His X-Wing punched out through the magnetic containment field at the end of the tunnel into hard vacuum, straight into the incoming fire from a group of 4 TIE bombers, Dukes, already so close he could clearly see them with the naked eye. Kell bracketed one of the oncoming Dukes and pulled the trigger even before the brackets could glow with the green of a laser lock. He saw his control surfaces brighten with the explosion behind him. Communication from his R2 unit scrolled over his data screen. Confirm 1 kill, Gold 1. His sensor unit showed 3 TIE Dukes below at just above ground level. Then 2, as Gold 3 scored a kill. But at a distance of 4 clicks and closing were 36 TIE fighter blips, 3 full squadrons. Gold 4's voice crackled over the comm system.
One, the launch tunnels are all down. They've been bombed out of existence.
One group, our mission is scrubbed, Kell said. Our status is Omega. 3, 4, get to us and we'll punch a hole out of here. 3 and 4 acknowledged, just as the range to target indicator dropped below 2 clicks. This meant that Gold 1 and Gold 2 were within range of the enemy's targeting. Gold 2, let's get out of here. Gold 2's reply was a weird, warbling yell. His X-Wing headed straight toward the oncoming squadron. Kell cursed. Had 2's comm unit malfunctioned? Laser fire now flashed thick around 2. The pilot was performing the most dangerous and most effective sort of fighter maneuver, the head-on approach, but against an entire squadron, and 12-1 odds made it likely he'd end up being vaped. Kell slewed his bow to port while maintaining his current course, then traversed back to starboard and fired, sending streaks of destructive red light toward the enemy. He saw distant flares, indicating he and 2 had managed at least to graze some targets. He returned more incoming fire and juked as 4 oncoming TIEs were suddenly on them, then past them. Time to come around in a tight loop and fall upon the TIEs from the rear. But, damn it, he wasn't lead fighter. The erratic 2 was. 2 was lining up for another head-on run. 2, break off! They're setting up for you. Follow me in. I'm lead now. 2 ignored him.
accelerating even faster and replying with another wavering war cry. Kell let go to increase the distance between them. He switched over to proton torpedoes. As all four TIE fighters began spraying laser fire at two, Kell caught one of the eyeballs in his brackets and fired. The fighter didn't blow up, but it explosively vented its cockpit atmosphere and sailed past Kell on a ballistic trajectory that would end on the simulated surface of Folor. The two TIEs he'd targeted broke off their approach, going to evasive maneuvers to elude the torps. He heard comm chatter.
You made 10-3. On your way.
Got it, 4. There's one coming up on my tail. He's mine.
Then 2's X-Wing, invisible against the blackness of space, suddenly flared back into Kell's vision. It exploded, an expanding ball of orange and yellow. A dull weight settled in Kell's stomach. He knew the real Gold 2 was unhurt, but Control would probably blame Kell for failing to save him. Gold 2 was a humanoid with arms, legs, torso, and head arranged in a comfortably recognizable fashion. Though nearly as tall as Kell, he was very lean, covered in short brown fur, with an elongated face, huge brown eyes, a broad flattened nose, and a mouth full of squarish white teeth. His features were better suited to a draft animal than a sapient being, but for the inquisitive, luminously intelligent quality of his eyes. He had a head of hair that would be the envy of many a human. As Kell arrived at the table, he was tugging it free of an elastic band and shaking it into a long waterfall of chestnut brown. Kell tried to rein in his irritation at the other pilot's blatant disregard of orders and protocol. He extended a hand. Kell Tanner. The alien shook his hand.
We are Flight Officer Hohas Equus.
Is that a royal we?
Biographies can wait,
Jansen said. We're here to review performance, remember? Kell stiffened at the reprimand.
Yes, sir. All right. 4, you had 2 kills and did a good job on your reconnaissance flyby. 3, 3 kills. Gold 2, you scored no kills, disobeyed orders twice, and managed to get yourself killed through bad tactics. Gold 1, very impressive, 5 kills, an instant ace if it were real life. Now for scoring. Gold 4, 1,350. Gold 3, 1,200. Gold 2, 2,300. Gold 1, 0.
What? The word exploded from Kell.
Lieutenant, I think you've got that backwards.
Jansen finally met his gaze and nodded.
That's right. According to Training Protocol 179, which we use to encourage cooperation, each wingman earns the points his wingman scored.
Kell couldn't keep the anger from his words.
That is manifestly unfair.
Jansen closed down his datapad. Take it up with the wingman who ended up with all your points.
For now, dismissed.
Kell glared at his wingman every step of the way to the Folor base cantina known as Downtime. When they were seated in the large chamber cut from living stone, back when Folor Base had been an active mining colony, the long-faced alien turned to him.
I am sorry, Flight Officer Tena.
Why did you do it? Fly off on your own, disobey orders.
I don't know. It is not so simple.
The alien hesitated.
Kell persisted.
You were saying? Gold 4 laughed. Kell turned his attention to her for the first time. If he could have created a hollow of the perfect female pilot, Gold 4 would have matched it exactly. She was tall and slender, with light hair worn long in a ponytail. Her face was the sort that could go from military blankness to unusual beauty just by assuming a smile. And she was smiling now. Kell growled, "What's so funny?" She stuck out a hand. "Tyria Sarkin, you're just so relentless. It struck me as amusing." He shook her hand and grinned a little glumly. It's less funny when you end up with vacuum for a mission score.
I will answer,
the alien said.
First, I am runt to my friends and fellows.
Kell frowned. Why runt?
It is accurate. Compared with my siblings, I am tiny.
None of them would fit into a fighter cockpit. So, you asked why I did what I did. It was not I. It was the pilot.
Tyria asked, which pilot?
Me.
Kel slumped, momentarily defeated by the circuitousness of Runt's answers. Tyria said, Runt, are you talking about many organisms or many minds? Runt smiled with relief.
Minds?
You have many minds and one of them is the pilot? Kel asked.
Yes, yes.
Kel snorted. Your pilot mind owes me 2,300 points and deserves a good beating. Tyria glanced at the entryway. The second wave has arrived. Both men who were approaching them had been through rough times in the past. One would have been quite handsome, but for the long, wicked scar that puckered his left cheek, crawled across his nose, and marred his forehead, while the other, taller man, had a prosthetic shell over part of his face. The one with the scar said, "More survivors of Lieutenant Jansen's bait-and-switch mission scenarios?" Kel managed a mirthless chuckle and gestured for them to sit. The pilot with the prosthetic headgear had a cold blue eye and a thin, immaculately trimmed mustache and beard that suggested ex-imperial warlord more than New Republic fighter.
Tom Finnan. This is Lauren.
Kel introduced his companions, then took another look at the man with the scar. Lauren? Not Garrick Lauren, the face? The scarred pilot nodded.
That's me.
I thought you were dead, said Kel. 7-8 years ago, the story broke just before the news about the first Death Star.
Yeah, sorry, said Runt. It is obvious we should have heard of this man, but we have not.
Kel answered. The face, the most famous child star of Imperial holodramas. He made Win or Die, and Imperial military recruitment went up 5%. Tyria's jaw was slightly agape. I had such a crush on you when I was 12. What happened to you? She asked. Everyone said that Alliance extremists killed you. He shrugged.
Almost. About the time I was trying to make the transition to teenage roles, some ex-Alliance extremists kidnapped me. They thought it would be a blow to Imperial morale.
It certainly was a blow to the morale of young girls, Tyria said. But first they decided to show me what the Empire was all about. I got the hardcore briefing on Imperial military and intelligence activities. Then, when they were set to kill me, an Imperial Commando rescue mission struck. That's where I picked up my little facial blemish, a graze from a laser blast. The two sides damn near killed each other. I was a real mess, emotionally as well as physically, so I hid from the imps. Since my body was missing and never turned up, they reported me dead. If you don't mind the question, Tyria looked a little distressed. Are you allergic to Bacta? Is that why you still have your scar? He shrugged.
No, I just kept it. A little reminder I earned from people I helped quite a bit when I was young.
Fainan held up a hand.
I'm the one allergic to Bacta. That's why I'm 20% mechanical and gaining.
He grasped Tyria's hand.
But every human cell longs to become better acquainted with this lady.
Tyria, I've just met you, and already I love you.
And don't think I love you for your looks, which are stunning, or your body, which is stellar, or your manner, which is bold and inflames me with desire. No, I love you because I hear you're a Jedi in training, and I need all the powerful friends I can get.
She looked distressed and yanked her hand away. You heard wrong, and you have the manners of a womp rat. Kel said, Are you really a Jedi in training? No. I have just a very little control over the Force. But I've been working on it for years and haven't improved on it much. The scarred pilot said,
You know, if I had even the tiniest control over the Force, what I'd do with it?
She shook her head.
On those long missions, I'd scratch that little spot in the center of my back I can never reach.
Ten pilots arrayed themselves under the white dome of the briefing amphitheater. Wedge stood before the lectern and holoprojector.
I'd like to congratulate you on surviving our initial culling process. We had 43 candidates. You 10 survived.
Wedge explained that they were to form a new commando squadron. At the moment, we are designated Gray Squadron. Lieutenant Johnson and I will be flying with you, as well as being in command. Our next ranking officer is Lieutenant Min Donos. In addition to his flying duties, Donos is our sniper. The rest of you are all of equal rank. For this briefing, I've ranked you by your scoring during pilot training. So, first among equals is Kel Tanner. He's our backup mechanic and demolitions expert. He also served with distinction among the commandos who helped take Borlaeus last year. Garrick Loran is one of our insertion experts, proficient in makeup and speaks several languages. Thalen Sandskimmer knows a lot about ground vehicles and is a Y-wing ace. Ton Fainan is our medical officer. Jesmyn Akbar is our communications expert. Vort Zabinring, Piggy, is proficient in hand-to-hand combat and capable of infiltrating Gamorrean units. Hohas Ekwesh, Runt, has substantial physical strength. Urst Thriag, the boffin, who most of you know as Grinder, is our code slicer. Tyria Sarkin is one of our intrusion experts. She is a member of the Antarian Rangers from Toprawa, an old order of warriors founded to aid Jedi Knights, and particularly proficient in silent movement in difficult terrain. Wedge assigned wingmates and designations, then dismissed the squadron. The file appeared on Admiral Triggett's datapad, its title, Recent Mork Project Data Gathering Results and Conclusions. Its author was Gara Petafel, the code slicer who had been so useful to him in providing information leading to the demise of Talon Squadron. He brought up the file and read its contents, then crooked a finger to summon his commanding officer. Prep the TIE squadrons. Tell Nightcrawler to prepare a load of the new Empyrean mines. We'll plant them in the unoccupied systems closest to Kominor, and then head on to Kominor system itself. It looks as though the rebels are staging from Fulor. It's time for us to put an end to it. Over breakfast, Kel told Tyria, I think I'm in love with you. Something like exasperation showed in Tyria's eyes. You've barely talked to me.
Well,
you don't know me. You've just decided that I match the concept in your mind of what your perfect mate should be, so now you're in love. We'd be the perfect couple. I'm tall, so you wouldn't have to bend over too far to kiss me. And we'll look good on the holograms together. I'm a pilot, so we can be partners. Right? The coldness in his gut solidified into a solid block of ice. You're wrong. You're wrong about me. She smiled without humor. The good thing about fantasy lovers is they don't need much of your time. I'm very flattered that you feel you've fallen in love with the fantasy Tyria, but she isn't me, Kel. She rose and was gone. The rest of the squadron gathered for breakfast a little later in the morning.
Commander Antilles, Lieutenant Johnson,
Fainan said.
Who do the old-timers think of as the greatest fighter pilot in the galaxy?
Jansen glanced at his commander. If you want to go by numbers and survivability, there's only one pilot who has survived two Death Star runs. From that perspective, Wedge Antilles is the best pilot ever. Phelan snorted with amusement. The rest looked at her. Jansen asked, Something funny, Sandskimmer?
No offense, sir. I'm sure Commander Antilles was very good in his prime, but, Commander, you're, what, 40?
Wedge managed to look amused and regretful at the same time.
28.
Exactly. Your reflexes are shot. There's only so far experience can go to overcome that handicap.
Wedge stood. Come along.
Reluctant and annoyed, she stood.
Where?
A little competition, if you're up to it.
In the oldest, dingiest hangar on Fulor base were three repulsor lift vehicles large enough to carry four X-Wings nose to tail. The vehicles were littered with dust and pebbles from the last ore loads they carried years ago. None of the three had an enclosed cockpit.
Wedge and Phelan listened to each of their engines and agreed on which two sounded best, and flipped the desecrated coins to see who'd get the best one. Phelan won. Minutes later, wearing vacuum suits, they were heading at a leisurely pace toward the near end of the pig trough. The pig trough was an anomalous geographical feature of Pholoa, a meandering lunar fissure that wandered for thousands of kilometers to the northeast, then cut sharply northwest for an even greater distance. The nearer portions of the trough were too broad, with curves too gradual to be of any use to the trainers, but more distant portions were used by pilot trainees for trench maneuvering and bombing practice. On the lip just above the first descent into the trough, Wedge spoke into his comm. Phelan, you receiving?
Yes.
Wes?
I'm here. I've dropped a flare 4 clicks up the trench. That's your goal.
Sand Skimmer, you ready?
I've been ready since I confirmed seal on my suit.
Go. He issued the command in a mild tone, but there was nothing restrained about the way Wedge kicked his ore hauler forward, roaring down the trough's shallow slope as though he were in command of a fast-moving combat assault vehicle.
Cheater!
Phelan was only a split second behind him. Well before they reached the bottom of the slope, she'd drawn almost even. Then she side-slipped into him. Wedge felt rather than heard the impact, but it didn't maneuver him out of line. He grinned. Only the greenest pilot would have failed to anticipate the maneuver and compensate for it. He gunned his engines. The nose of his hauler was a few meters ahead of hers, and thus able to push hers out of line. He shoved her until her left side began to scrape along the rift wall. The sudden friction slowed her, and he shot out ahead. "Sit trying, Sand Skimmer. I'm old. I might be tiring already." Her curses lit up the comm unit. They ran now with Phelan's bow to Wedge's stern. Whenever she'd sideslipped to try to pass, he broke in that direction, blocking her move. The end of the run was within sight, a distant red glow where Jansen had dumped his flare. The rift bottom was flat and smooth to the right of the straightaway, but grew stony and broken along the center. Phelan drifted right. Wedge drifted left toward the more difficult terrain. He knew Phelan had to wonder what his plan was in giving up the speediest approach to the finish line. She gained on him as they approached the rockiest portion of rift floor. But as they reached a tumble of boulders, he sideslipped right and his nose crossed over the highest of them. The move kicked him up several meters, and he came down right on top of her hauler. His vehicle's weight forced hers down. He held his control wheel on course by brute strength. His hauler straightened out as it came fully down off hers and onto the rift floor. And a second later, he passed the glowing flare. Phelan's hauler tucked in right behind him.
You...
That's right, Sand Skimmer. I won.
You cheated.
Phelan, consider this. When an Imperial laser cuts through your canopy and hits you, the energy will superheat the water in your tissue. You'll have to hose down the inside of your X-wing. When that happens, will you complain that the TIE fighter pilot cheated?
No, sir.
Phelan responded grudgingly. So, to keep these bad boys from cheating, what are you going to do?
I guess I'll have to learn to cheat, sir.
At mission briefing that afternoon, Wedge announced, "We now have a unit designation, courtesy of Tyrius Arkin. We are Wraith Squadron." Runt asked,
"What is a race?"
"Something I heard about in my childhood," Tyria said. "Dark phantoms that come in the night for you. That's what I think we are for the Empire and the Warlords." Runt smiled, showing big teeth.
"We like that,"
Wedge said.
"So, we now have a full squadron run for the first time. Wes?"
Jansen tapped his data pad. On the holoprojector appeared a small area star map. He pointed to one bright golden star. "Here's Kaminar. You are here. Here's Corellia and Morcor systems. This star is nicknamed Doldrums for its featureless uninhabited planets. That's our destination. We'll fly the course as a test of your hyperspace skill and ability."